I'm Frank Vaughn. It is April 20th, 2026. I will not be talking about weed today. If you've tuned in for my April 20th weed coverage, you will be sorely disappointed. For those of you who've been observing that I refer to the negative comments in the videos, you'll have to forgive me. For a while, I've been experimenting with the words that come out of my mouth and the resultant bot swarms and attacks on my website. It all seems to be linked together. I've been trying to figure out how, but I'm flying blind. So I think I'm just going to learn to live with it and not worry about it, but it is consistent. It's like, I don't think it's special to me. This probably happens to everybody else that's in my situation, but I've been trying to observe it. Anyway, I want to talk about Canada today. We're just going to go right to that. This is Canada. This is the United States. And I just want you to observe this map. We'll come back to it. And this is our prime minister. Our imported prime minister, Canadian PM, says close economic ties with U.S. have become a weakness. Mark Carney says Canada must build economic ties with other countries amid its shifting relationship with the United States. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney has said that after decades of partnership with the United States, close economic ties between the two countries have become a weakness that must be corrected. Carney gave remarks on Canada's relationship with the U.S. in a 10-minute video on Sunday, where he referenced the War of 1812. He engaged in about as much inflammatory rhetoric as possible and largely tried to indicate to the world, I guess, and to the Canadian people that we don't need the United States. We can stand on our own. I think this message is a little bit premature. I can appreciate the vision if indeed it's genuine. I've flirted in the past with the idea that Mark Carney is actually in some sort of loose coordination with Donald Trump. I don't believe that anymore. I think Carney is here to sacrifice Canada to his interests and in the fight against the United States and what they're trying to do. I don't think we're well positioned to do that as people. I think he'll be fine. I think parliamentarians will be fine. I think the cabinet ministers will be fine. They're not going to miss any rent. They're going to eat well the entire time. But the Canadian people are cheering for their own suffering. And I'll give Carney credit. I got to tell you, I appreciate the man's honesty when it comes to delivering the message that you will suffer. You will have to belt tighten. Your standard of living will be permanently hurt by his mandate and by what he is trying to do. He's told you that. I don't know, people just can't seem to hear it. We are not ready to stand on our own because we've spent decades outsourcing, deindustrializing, sending our manufacturing overseas. And now we're talking about trying to bring it back. And the actions that we're taking are too little or will take too long when we have a negotiation for one of our primary trade arrangements coming up and due, I believe it's July 1st. It's got to be done by July 1st. Doesn't matter. It's a very short window that we have. And maybe he thinks that he has leverage right now because the United States is embroiled in this foolish war in Iran. I'm not really sure, but back to the prime minister. The world is more dangerous and divided, Carney said. The U.S. has fundamentally changed its approach to trade, raising its tariffs to levels last seen during the Great Depression. Many of our former strengths, based on our close ties to America, have become weakness, he added, weaknesses that we must correct. Now, here's the big problem. This is reality. This map is reality. Below the Canadian border are 340-odd million people, the largest market in the world, and it's right beside us. As you can see, we are surrounded by oceans. Oceans are expensive. Oceans create logistics problems. You have to get your product from point A to point B. And you're competing with this country that pretty much makes, this is the world's factory, actually Asia. This is the world's factory. Almost everything you consume outside of food is coming from one of the nations in this region. And they do it by cheap labor, which Canada cannot compete with because Canada has all of these labor-protecting laws. I'm not saying that I'm against them. I'm saying that they present costs. We're not going to be able to build cheap products here. Nobody will buy it, and the world will not buy from us. The deals that we have with the United States are irreplaceable. That does not change. And the Canadian position, let's just go through some facts here, because before we do that, let's look at this. Forbes Daily, the Canadian travel boycott is costing the U.S. economy. The surging inflation making its way through the economy may not always be obvious. Businesses like restaurants, hotels, and airlines are passing along higher prices. separate line items. Common examples include credit card surcharges and service fees at restaurants or increased baggage fees with multiple airlines enacted, blah, 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 blah. But don't expect costs to come down again, even if the temporary justification is resolved. I agree with that. High prices are locked in. Even the president is now saying, or one of his advisors, I should say, is saying, you're not going to get below $3 a gallon gas in the United States until late 2026 or early 2027. If the bombs start falling again, and I suspect that they will in short order, I don't see how they don't, you can count on energy prices being high for much, much longer. At any rate, there's been a lot of copy about this travel ban. I was going to get into this. People celebrating, backslapping, talking about, we're really sticking it to the Americans. They're really missing that Canadian money. They're not. They have other problems. They got bigger problems than Canada. Canada's making so much noise, and it's self-defeating noise. And this country doesn't seem to realize how self-defeating it is. Here's where we are. And this is a dose of honesty. Canada's home prices have been falling for 4 years and haven't hit bottom yet. This you can compare and contrast with what you'll hear from the talking heads on CTV and CBC and even on YouTube, where they're constantly, every single month that we get new data out, they're just like, this is it. This is the bottom. This is a buyer's market. Get in now. If you don't get in now, you're going to miss it because it's going to rebound. It's going up. It's not. With immigration being tightened, whether you think it's been tightened enough, it doesn't matter. DFW's going home. International students being canceled. They're not cramming them into the houses 10 by 10 anymore, or they're doing it less. Permanent residents being targeted for their permanent residency status to be lifted. And the population of the country overall is falling. This is decreasing pressure on the housing market as new supply, as limited as it is, comes online. As the population falls, home prices come down. And the government does seem to be doing work towards ending the domination of cartels and criminality and money laundering in this country, which we've talked about on this channel. That's another thing that's been hyperinflating houses. I talked about this on X with somebody, just an individual. We were talking about housing prices. Houses were never meant to be your retirement fund. And the thing is we are 30 years into treating them as an appreciable investment that always gains value. People have planned their whole financial lives. Think about this. You bought a house when you were in 1995 or 2000. And you were 40 years old, 38 years old, 40 years old. I think that's roughly the average price of the first-time home buyer in this country now. And so for 20 years, you've seen your value go up. Now you're 60. Now you're 65. You're coming into retirement. And I heard people say this in 2022 because I was telling people, I'm like, this is it, man. My real estate agent is telling me this is it. It's over after this. Like, he was a man I never met, a man whose hand I never shook because all the C-19 nonsense. I never met him. I never met my lawyer. That man who I never met, I don't even know what he looked like, changed my life because he said to me, Frank, it's over. The wheels are coming off the bus. If you don't get out now, you're never going to get out, especially that place you're living in, the way it was falling apart and, you know, needed work and everything else. He's like, the market's going to fix your problems, man. You know, you need a bigger house for your kids. You don't have room. You're sleeping in your sunroom. The market will fix it for you. He said, just let me fix the place up. He said, no. There's no fixing up. List the thing and trust me. And I did. I put my trust in a guy I'd never met. And then I was lucky I did. You're 60, 65. You're looking at the big bag of money that you think is your house. And it ain't going to be there for you. And a lot of people subscribe to this. The same agents, the same experts they're bringing on TV now that are telling you the bottom's in, and they've been telling you the bottom's in for 4 years, those same ones are the ones that are getting you wrecked. And they're in bad shape too because they're not closing deals. So they need the bottom. So they're projecting the bottom, but the bottom ain't here. Anyway, back to the honesty. Things are likely to get worse before they get better. That is an understatement. Canadian home prices have been grinding lower in this country for 4 years. Now, since the heady days of the pandemic boom and March brought no reprieve, sales in what normally marks the beginning of the busiest real estate season were the weakest in 17 years, and prices slipped another 0.4% from the month before, said Robert Haig, Assistant Chief Economist at the Royal Bank of Canada. The National Composite MLS Home Price Index remains firmly on a four-year-long decline. Not quite a crash like you've seen at the pandemic, but if you draw a line right through that pandemic line, we're testing bottoms. This is at a time, and I'm going to show you some other indicators, but this is at a time when the prime minister is openly telling you you're going to be broker, you're going to tighten your belt, and your cost of living is going to diminish, and we are going to try to divorce ourselves. If his rhetoric is true, because I don't know if it is, maybe he's just trying to build leverage. This is a guy who can say whatever he wants. He can cater to the elbows up nonsense and then turn around this summer and make a deal with the United States. And everybody will celebrate him as a hero. It doesn't matter what he does. It doesn't matter what he does. The big red machine got rid of Trudeau. Everybody hated him. Trudeau's off with Kate Perry. Looking like a teenager, man. Looking like a hippie. Looking like just a young guy living his life. Not a guy with... Remember all the wholesome pictures we were force-fed, shoved down our throat of him and Sophie and how they were the classic family, him and his kids, and it was all this family stuff? And now he's binge posting about being this teenager rocking around with some kind of pop star. This guy ran our country. And the big red machine, for all it's worth, wasn't able to keep the public convinced that he was a good idea. The liberal voters saw through it, but now they got Carney, Bank of Canada governor, Bank of England governor, Brookfield man. Guy lived in New York for over a decade. All his money's parked in the United States. None of it matters. None of it matters. Because he's going to set things right. I remember a time when the left didn't celebrate central bankers. I remember a time when the left recognized the corporatocracy and its ills and how it didn't serve the interests of the people or the free market. Whether you were coming at it as a libertarian or coming at it as a commie, you recognized a common enemy at the very least. Those days are over. Anyway, with that in mind, do you think this is going to go higher or do you think it's going to go lower? But back to the whole boycott, feel-good story. We're just sticking it to those Americans. We haven't been drinking that bourbon. As if that matters. We're buying wine from the Okanagan. These are all messages that Mark Carney's been delivering. And it's working. I mean, it's building that Canadian pride, getting your French's ketchup and your coffee crisp bars, even though they may be owned by a foreign conglomerate company. We don't really make that stuff here. French's is actually owned by an American company, but they use Canadian ingredients. Here's another chapter in the real story. In the fourth quarter of 2025, Canadian household debt reached $2.6 trillion across all credit products, according to TransUnion's Q4 2025 Credit Industry Insights report. While overall debt grew by 4.3% year over year, that's 4.3% a year, the number of credit active Canadians increased by only 1.2%. This is a puff piece. It doesn't look like it, but it is. Because if you go down and you read, it says risk distribution remains healthy as score migration improves. So people are using their credit, so their credit scores are going up. That's how it works. If you don't use credit, your credit score will actually reset. You have to make sure you're using it or you'll lose it all and you won't be able to get a loan when you need one. Rising outstanding balances alongside slower growth in the credit active population indicates the borrowing activity is concentrated among existing credit card users. So if you've been borrowing, you're borrowing more. The pattern is likely being driven by consumers using credit more actively as a financial management tool, suggesting that this trend reflects a healthier, expanding economy rather than elevated financial stress. That's quite the conclusion. So debt is growing, and Canadians are using it as a financial management tool, which means they need to borrow money to manage their finances, and this somehow indicates a healthy economy. That's good times. Here's another set of good times. Analysts say over $1 trillion in investment abandoned Canada. The massive sum of lost investment between 2015 and 2024 marks the largest capital flight in Canada's modern history. A recent RBC report shows that over $1 trillion has departed Canada. Just so you know, it's not Juno News saying this. It was RBC saying this. They're, what do they call it here? The thought leader panel. RBC's thought leadership. Massive sum of investments left Canada. So we got $2.6 trillion in private debt. The federal government alone is $1.5 trillion in debt, running a $100 billion deficit this year. The provincial governments are all massively indebted to the tune of, I don't know how many trillions, north of 1 trillion, because I know the Ontario government is 450 or 500 billion in debt as of right now. I remember Doug Ford campaigned in 2018 on fixing that problem. He hasn't fixed it. He's massively expanded it, overspent way more than Kathleen Wynne ever did. That's just a fact. And another fact is the Canadian dollar is being dumped from foreign exchange reserves at a record pace. What's going on? This is happening to the greenback. It's also happening to the euro as the world, before the war began, the world was realigning. It was becoming a multipolar world. BRICS introduced the unit, which is at least 40% gold backed. We talked about this on the channel and the inevitability that there's a new regionalism coming into place and there will be alternative international settlement layers. And the world is beginning to position for that. They're buying gold in Asia. They're buying gold. They're buying silver. They're putting it in the safe to make sure they have it. As we slowly move towards this, people are dumping dollars. They're selling treasuries. And it's happening gradually. First a little, then very fast. That's how this goes. The cliff dive doesn't happen all at once. It's a gradual going over the edge. And Canada is facing the same fate. Our dollar is backed by nothing. We don't have any gold. We don't have any silver. We have the taxpayer. We have the ability to print them. And we do have resources under our feet. But a lot of those resources answer to the leaseholders or the companies that are developing them are foreign in nature. We talk about Canadian potash, but who dominates the industry? We talk about Canadian oil. How big is Syncrude? We talk about Canadian minerals. How many Chinese companies are operating mines in Canada right now and doing so and selling to markets that benefit them and their interests? Canada has a huge problem. If we wanted to become a fortified state, I'm all for that. I'm all for a Canada that is a strong national entity. First, I think we'd have to achieve full independence from the British Crown, which a lot of people don't seem to want to do. I think we'd have to adopt a better governing system to actually truly call ourselves independent. But we would also have to develop our own resources. We would also probably have to nationalize back into our own hands, kick the Chinese out, let alone the Americans. Forget about that. We need to kick out the bad foreign actors. I don't believe the Americans are bad actors in Canada. Sure, they operate to the tune of their own interests. But this idea of thumbing our noses at them when they account for such a large share of our trade and pretending that we can replace them with other nations is just foolish to a degree I can't even fathom. And I have to hope that Carney is just messaging to his people ahead of cutting a deal. Maybe he feels he has some leverage because of the American mistake in Iran. But I digress. The reason trillions of dollars are leaving the country, the reason consumers are in debt, the reason our dollars are being dumped off of foreign exchange is because the faith the world has in Canada, far from being a rising star, it has been diminished largely by Trudeau and what he was doing. And you could say that Carney is here to try and correct that. But when we look at what Carney's been up to, the Carney government's major projects, a brief status report. This, Prime Minister Carney breaks ground on the Contrecoeur container terminal project. This is in Quebec. This is the only shovel in the ground project that he's actually kicked off. There are other projects that are in the works that are well capitalized. Here's one. Some projects are highly breakable or bankable with strong, deep-pocketed proponents such as LNG Canada 2 project or the Red Chris Copper Mine project. But others, such as the Alto Quebec City Toronto high-speed rail line, this $90 billion high-speed rail line that is going to expropriate property. I mean, maybe I should do a whole segment on that, but all you got to do is go on Facebook. Forgive me for even recommending that. Facebook is such a nightmare. Totally different subject and segue, but it's nothing but AI slop and nonsense and thirst videos. And like, I'm there clean. I don't follow anything. I'm barely there. I'm there for marketplace. I'm looking to see what I can get cheap if I need anything. Most of the time, that the answer is no, but I keep my eye on it. But every now and again, I go into my feed, a clean feed. All it feeds me is thirst and AI fakery. It's bad. I think if you're a teenager and you're going there, it's going to destroy your mind. Like it's worse than TikTok. It's worse than anything. Facebook sucks, but there are some very solid community groups. And if you go to the Marmaro community group or you go to any of the communities that are along the Alto high-speed rail line route, these people are very worried about expropriations. And I've talked about in previous videos how the government has strengthened its ability to rob people of their land because, again, you don't have property rights in Canada. You don't have fake property rights in Canada. You have a privilege. You work hard. You pay your mortgage off. You deal with depreciation and the value of your assets. But at the end of the day, you don't have property rights. The government can take it from you. And then you add in the layer of these intersecting tribal land claims that they're doing in BC, which is going to scare capital off. Nobody's going to want to underwrite mortgages when nobody knows who owns the land. It's wild, man. But at the end of the day, the Alto Quebec City Toronto high-speed rail line isn't going to build the economy. It's going to be a net drain, and that's one of the big projects. We got the Wind West Atlantic Energy Offshore Wind Project. I mean, why? We have coal. We have gas. The world is waking up from the delusion of being anti-energy. We can build nuclear. We don't need wind turbines everywhere. It's a failed idea. It's a very inefficient idea. It's a very expensive idea at a time when what we need is cheap energy. We're going to build out expensive energy at some future point. And that's the point that I would like to make in summary after reading all of this and looking at it. We're not breaking ground on these projects. We got a memorandum of understanding with Alberta about a pipeline that might be built someday. It hasn't broke ground. These projects, if we accelerated, if we went full steam ahead, started breaking ground today on all of them, Mark Carney summoned his dictatorial powers and demanded that they be built. The earliest they would come online, some of them, not all of them, would be in the 2030s. And we are going to declare an economic war on the United States as a result of tariffs, because that's what he cites. He cites the tariff arrangement as if Canada doesn't charge everybody else tariffs. I know I've talked about that before, but it's important to revisit. It has nothing to do with the Iran war. It has nothing to do with American foreign policy overseas, because all of these things existed before this foolish war got started. We're reacting to tariffs and the fact that Donald Trump put a spotlight on the things that are wrong with Canada. Now, he's distracted right now. He's probably not even paying attention to anything the Prime Minister is saying as he tries to build some momentum going into these negotiations. Maybe the Prime Minister, again, senses he has leverage. It's an overreaction. It's okay for one country to charge another country tariffs. It's fine. We do it all the time. This is cutting off our nose. It's not even cutting off our nose and spider face. It's cutting off all of our limbs over somebody nicking our nose. It's a better analogy. We need the United States. We're going to need them for quite a while. We should renegotiate this trade agreement. We should try to get what we had before. Keep it going. And if we're genuinely interested in creating a fortified economy in Canada, spend the next 5 to 10 years actually getting it done. Build it, and then try and break away. I would argue we still can't. Why? Again, it just comes down to the reality. The United States is right there. Even in a multipolar order where you have an Asian bloc with their own basket of currencies, where you have the Russian ruble being a settlement layer for oil and gas, where you have the euro dollar, I don't know what good it is. They don't have anything. Europe doesn't have a lot. They need the world. They need everybody. You have these regional blocks in North America. Do you think there's only one tail that wags the dog in this world? And that's a little nation about the size of New Jersey that wags the entire United States. But I'm trying to leave that out of today's video. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that when the bombs start falling again, because they will. I'm almost certain of it. Would be happy to come on here and say I was wrong. Who's going to lead North America? Whose currency? Whose economy? How big is the Canadian economy? How big is the U.S. economy? How close are we to each other? Even if we do develop our resources, even if we do start shipping to the world, even if we build out these solutions in 5 or 10 years, we're still going to need our partners. We're still going to need our neighbors. We can't afford to enter into a long-term conflict with these people over tariffs. You don't like Donald Trump? You don't like the big bad orange man? Look, there's things that he's done that I absolutely despise. There's things that he's done, and this is what people forget. For 10 years, I've been charting his rise. For 10 years, I've been looking at his domestic policies and thinking, man, some of this is gold that I'd never thought I'd see in my lifetime. I absolutely, deeply disagree with the war in Iran. I think it's the end of his presidency. I think it's the end of everything they're trying to do down there, and I think it's going to empower Democrats. They've lost. They never had the Democrats, but they've lost the independents over this thing. And if the bombs start falling again, Chapter 3 of this war will be by far the worst, and we'll lock in so much more damage. I said I was going to try not to talk about it. The fact is, this is like, there's nothing more important right now than the consequences that are going to arise out of the Middle East. This is going to affect all of us, especially, like, I shouldn't say especially here in Canada, but you're going to feel it. You're already going to feel it. You're already feeling it. You just don't know it yet. And that's today, if the thing stops today. To sum up, we need the United States. Inflaming them, even if we disagree with their foreign policy, even if we don't like Trump, Trump's going to be gone. The guy's probably going to get impeached. He's going to spend the last 2 years of his administration fighting the House and the Senate, which I think he's going to lose. And what are we going to be left with? Is this really what it's all about? Is it just Trump? Like, why does Carney have to signal a divorce from the United States if he knows in his heart? First off, he's here to fight Donald Trump. And he knows in his heart that Trump is going to encounter a lot of problems coming over in the next couple of years. Like, this war, even if it ended tomorrow, it's going to be tough. It's going to be really tough. He can call the polls fake. He can call everything fake. But the people that actually do accurate polling work show that it's deeply unpopular. His disapproval rating really is bad. It's not a made-up artifact. They can silence Mark Mitchell all they want, but the daily presidential approval poll that has been accurate all these days and all along is still ticking along and showing the distress the American public has for this particular operation. He's going to be gone. And is the plan, once he's gone, to just flip the script and repair relations? Is it just going to be a game of optics? So we declare that we hate everything American now, and then we'll flip our script. Kind of like the Canadian flag. This is my problem, how deeply programmed this country is. The Canadian flag was treated as a hate symbol in the early 2020s, and even the late 2010s. Was treated as a hate symbol into 2022, where if you were flying a Canadian flag, it was cause for suspicion. You might get a call from the police or CSIS because you had too much Canadian pride. People got offended when a Canadian flag during the Freedom Convoy was draped on Terry Fox. They called it an abomination. And then later, the same thing happened where Palestinian flags were draped all over Terry Fox, and the doting media had nothing to say. And the Canadian public elbows up people had nothing to say because we're deeply programmed and hypnotized. We just do what we're told in this country. And so they've now repaired the Canadian flag. It's fine for Carney to engage in nationalistic rhetoric, which is what he's doing. The Liberal Party went from being the post-national party to being the party of nationalism. I'm not saying they engage in Puritan nationalism. I'm not saying that they're actually ideologically heading in that direction. I'm saying they use the words and the masses applaud. So the same thing can happen in the future, where right now we hate the Americans, but then on a dime we can flip our script and be like, oh, they're our long lost friends. We just had a little fight between family members. We love our Americans. Money goes flowing back. Next thing you know, we're talking about people vacationing in the United States again and how the family's back together. And like, maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's where we're headed. It's just a momentary rhetorical device to undermine the Trump administration ahead of a future reparation, because the Canadian public never holds its leaders accountable. The courts decided that the Emergencies Act was wrong. That our Constitution, our most precious Charter of Rights and Freedoms, was suspended without justification. Canadian public. Sections of it demanded justice, but not those under the hypnosis of the big red machine. Guys, we got to realize something. An alternative point of view, a conservative point of view, if you will, I don't know, a realist point of view. I don't even like to use the term conservative. It's about realism. It's a resistance now in Canada. We've lost all the major battles. We still have some ahead, but it's a resistance movement. It is isolated to certain provinces, and it is outnumbered everywhere else. The big red machine is running at about 45, 46%. The polls aren't fake. That's what's happening. But even worse, the NDP are consistently polling about 11 points, 11, 12 points on average, sometimes as high as 15, sometimes as low as 8 or 9. So I'm giving it 11, 12 as an average. 45, we'll cut it to 11. Together, like it's 57, 56, 57% of the electorate. And then there's the 4 to 5% who vote green. So now you're in the 60s. It's a really bad situation. Rationalism, honesty, realism. It's on the ropes. It's a resistance movement. So I think we have to retool our expectations around that. Maybe it's time to vote with your feet. I know people who are moving west. They're coming out here to be part of this resistance. Because it ain't going to happen under Ford. Ford is not a resistor. Him and Carney Gladhan, they hug each other. Every time I see them together, I'm like, just kiss him. Just kiss him, Dougie. Give him a big old wet one. Everything east of Manitoba is it's kind of a lost cause right now. And it's interesting, too, because of the whole diversity ladder that we've built. Watching Wab Kinew in Manitoba refer to the Epstein class and the muted response that he got. I mean, people said some bad things about him, but he gets to move on. The media moves on. I've always said that Wab had the opportunity and still has the opportunity to be the Indigenous hero that so many want in Western Canada, but I'm not sure he's equipped to take the opportunity. He's a member of the NDP. Anyway, to sum it all up, I think it's a sad thing that my principal hope is that my prime minister is completely lying to me and lying to his base about the relationship with the United States and that he will flip his script. I think there's a very real chance that happens. I think there's a very real chance that there's a deal cut. Maybe it'll work out better for Canada, but I'm not so sure about that either because, oh, if there's a miracle, if Trump can extricate himself from Iran somehow before summer, he's going to come back home defeated. That's what it is, folks. I know people don't want to hear that. The American military is defeated in Iran. It's not the first time. The American military was defeated in Afghanistan. It was defeated in Vietnam. I don't know how Americans can cling to the illusion that the American military is invincible and almighty. It roves the waters of the world via the cooperation of its peer competitors. The day the Chinese and the Russians decide to put a stop to it is the day that American military might, for what it is exposed for the paper tiger that it is, if it hasn't been already. Because in spite of all the words of the administration, the Strait of Hormuz is still in the control of the Iranians. The Americans are not in a position to issue ultimatums, but anyway, trying not to talk about that. If there's a miracle, and they get themselves out of that, they're going to come home looking for a win. And Canada's on the list. There was Venezuela, there's Mexico, there's Cuba, and there's Canada. We've been put on notice. And in spite of my opinions about the Iran war, I recognize our position. And an American administration looking for a win might decide to find it in this country. And I'm convinced we are not prepared for that outcome. For all the talk of rebuilding the military, for all the talk of rebuilding our manufacturing and our resource production, we are years away from that being an effective counter to whatever the United States gives us and whatever the United States presents as a challenge to us. We need more time. We need to renegotiate the deal. We need to actually, beyond that, put an end to this whole notion we can get away from the United States. Like even I'm sorry, I'm going long here. Maybe I'm a bit disjointed, but you just have to forgive me on that. A fortified Canadian economy will not be as good as a fortified North America. Working together with the United States, in spite of our disagreements, look, people, you know, there's a whole pile of the United States public that are still American citizens that absolutely fundamentally disagree with this war in the Middle East. They're still Americans at heart. And I'm a North American. I'm a geopolitical realist. I recognize that we are tied together and we can't get away. So even if we fortify our economy, we should do it as part of North America. It's the only game in town. We cannot replace it. We can talk a good game. We can take 5 or 10 years and try to divorce. But we're going to find out we cannot escape each other because we live and share the same very large, very well-resourced, very potentially rich piece of land and geography. And everybody else is thousands of miles away. That's reality. I'm Frank Vaughn. If you like the work, please consider supporting it via the website. I've absolutely nuked my donation prospects. I'm not monetized. You guys keep it going. I'll talk to you in the next one.